welcome to Podcast on Fire 14, your number one Asian cinema podcast, with your host, me, Stuart Sutherland. Joining us tonight, we have Ken.
Hello, everybody.
And Mike Banner.
Hello.
Starting off the show on a bit of a sad note. I'd like to take this moment and pass on our sincerest regards to the family and friends of the late Bobby Lynn Haynes. Lynn passed away on the 28th of February. Lynn's contribution to Asian cinema through assisting online or even recently with the Media Blast DVDs, which are coming out soon, I believe, he leaves behind a legacy that we all should respect. I never got to know Lynn, but after reading so much about him, I now really wish I did. He sounded like a great guy. I'm definitely putting my money into the future release of Heroes 2, which includes an audio commentary by him. And
well, how closely did you work with Lynn for the Ninja in Ancient China DVD, Mike?
It started off with the film festival I organised in February 2007, because he got wind through one of the forums that I was working on it, and he sent me an email offering any help could. And then he helped me secure some of the films, and not asking for any money or anything in return, he just wanted to help out. And then obviously when I was doing the DVDs, he was pretty much the first person I thought of because of how well respected he was amongst the fans on a lot of forums for his knowledge. He had an encyclopedic knowledge of Kung Fu films. So I asked him if he wanted to write liner notes, because I knew he'd done that before, I think, for the Image DVDs of their Shaw Brothers releases in the US.
And also for Seven Grandmasters a few years ago. Very good liner notes for that film.
I just emailed him and chatted to him a bit, and he came on board. Not getting paid huge amounts of money or anything, but he was never really bothered about the money, to be honest. I think he just did it because he really enjoyed it, and he loved the genre and wanted to be part of it and help out with any companies or any people who were part of it. And he wrote the liner notes for Ninja in Ancient China, but he's also done some for Return of the Deadly Blade and the Dream Sword as well. So Lynn's notes will be coming out in little booklets for those two releases. And those next two releases will be dedicated to Lynn as well.
The select few emails I sent to Lynn and he sent to me was basically about me asking for some information, or rather asking questions, and he was always very open about sharing, and very, you know, maybe it's easy to, you know, if you're deemed an expert and you get deep into it, maybe it's easy to let it go to your head, I don't know, but it certainly didn't went to Lynn's head at all. He was very forthcoming about sharing what's suitable to share, and really just being a nice guy about his, you know, expert status online and stuff like that. So you know, you couldn't ask for a nicer and more enthusiastic guy within this genre. And it's it was abrupt to find this out, but I think it's always assuring when whoever you deal with that their work will live on, their legacy will live on, and you know, for me that's always comforting.
Okay, a wee thing I've got new for us, sort of just to lighten the mood. I want us to sort of go one by one and tell each other what is our favourite Ikin Cheng movie.
Leave me alone. No, I'm just kidding. What the hell was that name of that? It had to be you. That's my favourite Kim Cheng movie.
I thought you were trying to lighten the mood.
Oh, come on.
Well, and it will do you first while I just have a little think.
Okay, off the top of my head, I'll just go with the Young and Dangerous film, the first one.
What a surprise.
Sarcastic cunt.
Well, the first thing that springs to mind is that I've seen is Tokyo Raiders. Mm-hmm. Which I'm guessing I'm going to have to pick that as my favourite Ekin Cheng film. But that film's rubbish.
It is.
Oh, well.
It is rubbish, but...
At least she's tried.
I did try and watch A Man Called Hero once. Mm-hmm. But no, that was crap. I turned it off. And I tried to watch Avenging Fist as well. But that was also crap and I turned it off. I think that covers all my experience of Ekin Cheng films.
Okie doke. Okay, moving on to our questions from the boards, which can be found at podcastandfire.com/forum. Question 1. Tons of Fun asks us, what do you think of the female action heroes in Asian cinema? Mike?
Yeah, I like them. Ken?
Now, how did you struggle with this question?
I don't really know.
Which ones do you like?
Moon Lee. Yeah, I think I'm going to go... Well, actually, yeah, Moon Lee. Yukari Oshima, who obviously kicks a lot of ass. I think she's in Outlaw Brothers.
Angel.
Frankie Chan. Yeah, I don't like Angel. I thought I would, but it wasn't very good.
It's sort of the first one, but obviously not the best one. But in that film, I think Yukari is that's one of her best films. Cause she's fucking brutal in that film.
Is she in Angel Terminators 2 as well?
Yes.
That's one I've heard loads about and haven't managed to see yet. That's supposed to be just solid action.
It's okay, a low budget film, but as you say, it's more watch it for the action, but it's not really a standout as such. I like others better than I like Dreaming Reality. It's one of the better ones.
Right, yeah, I haven't seen that yet. Book of Heroes as well, which has just been released by Joy Sales on VCD with English subtitles.
Yeah,
that's supposed to be a good one as well.
It's supposed to be a very good action film in one of these grating comedies outside of the action. I think my personal favorite, Chu Yun Ping, directed it. So it's got a lot of Taiwan madness, but a lot of good Hong Kong action, I guess.
Bury Me High, that's a really good Moon Lee film. With Ching, is that Ching Ka Lok in it?
Yeah.
And exactly. Ching Ka Lok plays that recurring character Wisely Andy Lau and Chai Fat has played and a bunch of other people.
Which was invented by Ni Kuang, who's the famous Shaw Brothers writer.
Exactly. Now that I think of it, I might be wrong that it's Ching Ka Lok that plays Wisely. It might be the director of that film, Choi Soo Ming. So I'm not sure about that, but it is a Wisely film.
Mm-hmm. But then going back, if we're going to go like right back, then Chang Pei Pei was awesome in plenty of films. Really petite and cute, but also pretty hard. Looked pretty mean when she really got into the action. And she's got plenty of classic films with her in as well. Blade Hermit is one of my favourites.
Yeah, I haven't seen her. I like her in Golden Swallow as well, the sort of semi sequel to Come Drink With Me, I think.
Which is soon to plays get a... I was going to say Come Drink With Me soon to get a Dragon Dynasty release with a Chang Pei Pei commentary, I believe, with Bay Logan. I mean, a bit of promo for them there, like they need it, but just thought I'd mention it.
Didn't she have like a ballet background, or at least a dancing background?
Yeah.
Chink Pepesa, I mean, it fits the description that Mike used there, that she's very petite and very, you know, she can move smoothly, but still be, you know, the combination between that and being, you know, a good fighter on screen, or a character that appears as a good fighter. I think that was a good mix. I can rarely take my eyes off Chink Pepe whenever she's doing a movie. And it's not only due to her being incredibly attractive, which is, and still is.
A daughter is as well. Didn't Michelle Yeoh and Moon Lee both come from dancing backgrounds as well, like Chang Pei Pei?
Yeah.
Yeah, and even Moon Lee does. She does work within the dancing community, arranging shows and stuff. I believe she talked about that on the Sue Warriors DVD that HKL released. So she did a movie recently. I read, not an action movie, but sort of a drama with religious or philosophical subjects. I don't have the name of the movie right now, but I remember that, oh, there's Moon Lee promoting a new movie. But probably she's probably has no desire to go back into the action fray, maybe due to age, or maybe due to, you know, it's not anything there for her to do anymore. I mean, back then there was this, you know, you could combine Moon Lee, Yukari Oshima, Sibel Hu, Xiang Yung, and combine all of them between movies and stuff, and you had 10 movies given there. 10 movies done, basically, already. Just put them in there. But personally, I do like Moon Lee, but there are a couple of other ballsy chicks out there, if you will. thinking Sharon Jung, Jung Pam Pam, which I think she has the reputation of being one of the most daring of the female 90s action heroines. I think she did a lot of crazy stunts, particularly in Angel Terminators 1, and just a bunch of other stuff, along with Michelle. I guess she's one of these female Jackie Chans, if you will, if you want to make that lazy comparison. But yeah, you have Jade Leung as well, to a lesser degree, to be honest. I think she got famous for the Black Cat movies. I only seen the first one, which is by no stretch of the imagination a good film. But if you want to look for Jade Leung movies where she, you know, everything works for her all around her, I think you have to look out Enemy Shadow, and in particular Fox Hunter, which is an action movie she did with Yuan Chan, directed by Steven Tung, Dong Wai, which is all around just an excellent action movie from start to end, and also a decent drama at the same time. And an actual decent drama. So I think that speaks to the talents of Dong Wai as a director. That was one of those films that you don't really expect much of. You put it on, the cover looks, you know, fairly goofy. I think she has Yuan Chan tied up. I think he has a hand grenade in his mouth or something. You know, this might be something. And then you realize that this is absolutely, seriously kick-ass. And just keeps building and building and building, and even, as I said, injects some good drama points. So that's a reason to like Jade for that movie in particular.
Going back to Jung Pan Pan just for a sec, she's in Return of the Deadly Blade, which obviously I'm releasing, and there's an interview on the disc with her. Where she actually talks about action, says that the fighting is when she really enjoyed it. It's when she kind of came alive. She liked, you know, getting in the scraps, and she didn't mind being hit or hitting people. So that probably explains why, you know, in the 90s or late 80s, she was well up for getting in on the crazy stunts and action.
She has that slight ferocious look too. That least fit these modern day actioners. I have only seen, I think, one period movie with with Sharon. What was it? There was a Cliff Lock movie, Duel of the Seven Tigers, I believe. Which has a fairly good fight, but that's one of those martial arts efforts that, you know, isn't noticed as such, but I always remembered her face. Maybe that's something for Green Fan to unearth. Duel of the Seven Tigers.
Yeah, definitely worth looking at.
Because there, I think there exists a, going over to male action heroes for a bit, I think there exists a fair fan base online, at least for Cliff Lock. Have you heard of him, Mike?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, he's in tons of films.
Yeah. Maybe not the most charismatic guy, but obviously he had the talent to be in movies. He was a genuine martial artist. Don't know the style he used, but anyway.
I think Vengeance have put out of quite a few films, you know, cheaper old school ones that have come up.
Rare Scope, at least one, the blanking on the name here.
And Troy Lee Fat.
Yeah.
Probably Troy Lee Foot. Like, well, going on from what we spoke about, I think, not last week, but the week before, which was Cynthia Rothrock, of course,
mm-hmm.
who is in lots of Asian action films, having usually pretty starry roles, if not the star. I've seen quite a few classics as well, not just, you know, ropey films, but Righting Wrongs and Yes Man.
Yes Man, yeah, Yes Man. Was that a first one, Yes Madam, or at least the first one where she seriously broke?
Yeah, I believe so. Well, that was, if I'm correct, that was Michelle Yeoh's big break as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, maybe that was before Royal Warriors, but which was one of the first Michelle flicks. Maybe those came out, you know, the 183 and Navi 84, stuff like that. Royal Warriors otherwise, that's one of the first Hong Kong DVDs I ever bought. I remember, you know, being floored by that film. Well, one of those hard-hitting films where people fall through stuff and on stuff on a regular basis. Just a painful film to watch. And she's, you know, she earned that breakthrough in a big, hard way. Michelle.
I've just thought of another person I can't believe I only just remembered. Angela Mao.
Yeah.
And obviously we've spoken before on Puff.
Mm-hmm.
She was another kind of attractive, petite, kind of cute looking, but also proper mean when she needed to kick some ass.
Yeah.
Hapkido is obviously a classic film with Angela Mao.
Mm-hmm.
Broken Oath, Lady Whirlwind. And I think we mentioned before as well, there was a company in Japan releases a series of her films on DVD,
yeah.
and had a bit of a Angela Mao film festival and had her over for some appearances and that kind of stuff. Which is nice to see her getting a bit of recognition.
Only in Japan. You won't see that in Hong Kong. But then again, it takes money to arrange something and a will. So,
yeah.
There you go.
Well, my kind of thoughts on the subject is more along the lines of you. Well, you guys, because without these, like, just action heroes in cinema, we wouldn't get such films as, like, Magnificent Warriors or, like, Cara Hoy and My Young Auntie. Like, even to the lengths of, even Cynthia Khan was enjoyable in the line of Duty 4. Like,
oh, yeah.
She was fucking gung-ho for that film, hanging off the front of speeding vehicles.
Yeah, she was a badass in that.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
that was the Donnie Yen film?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's awful. It's a terrible film. If anything, as I say, very, very, very rarely, too much action. There's virtually no story. It was just action scene, and it got really repetitive, I found.
That's quite enjoyable.
I believe Cynthia Khan came from a dance background as well. I mean, which would make sense. I mean, girls are more likely to be doing dance, I would have thought, at a young age, and, you know, the flexibility and the timing and rhythm and stuff, which is all kinds of things you'd need to do martial arts films. And also, I assume you two know about this, but her name was given to her, was it by Wong Jing, taking Cynthia Rothrock's first name, and Michelle Yeoh, or she was known at the time, Michelle Khan's last name, to make some kind of super female action star name.
Oh, they know what they're doing.
I always like referring to her as like the love child between Cynthia Rothrock and Michelle Yeoh.
Well, that one isn't so hard to be annoyed by, but when they named Mr. Lloyd Hutchinson into Conan Lee, you know, that takes lameness to a new level, you know. You got Conan, you got, you know, Mr. Schwarzenegger, and then you got Bruce Lee. Combine the two. You know, I'm surprised that there hasn't been a trailer for one of his films, maybe Ninja and the Dragon's Den, where they have a trailer voice that go like that. Remember Bruce Lee? Remember Conan? Now there's Conan Lee. You know, twice the whatever.
Stupidity.
Having said that, if you're looking on YouTube, you probably can find something along those lines, so, you know, it's not far-fetched.
Moving on over to our second question of the evening, Tons of Fun asks us, why do you think female action stars have proved very popular in Asia, a supposedly old-fashioned part of the world, but a flop in the West, which is supposedly to be more liberal about these things? Ken?
Well, I had a bit of thought about this one, and this answer might not be sensible at all. But, you know, if you go back in the history of Asian cinema, of Hong Kong cinema, Taiwan cinema, the acceptance of a female action hero has not, or heroine rather, has not been, apparently not been a difficult thing for audience to accept, even though they've played male roles as well. You have Fung Bo Bo, I believe, did a few movies where she played Fung Sai-ok. So apparently it's not been an old-fashioned view has not affected cinema as such, at least not in the 60s where that was evident before the likes of Chang Cheh brought out the male hero again in One-Armed Swordsman. You know, problem in terms of breakthrough in the West, you know, we were talking about Moon Lee and Kara Hoey and Cynthia Khan and Michelle and stuff like that. Most of these women have had star billings, but at that time it's not been distribution, you know, a wide distribution in cinemas and stuff like that. It's been the video market, and the films in themselves have been mostly B movies. So the exposure has mostly been limited to the, you know, the fan community that is now sort of the online fan community. So they've been mostly cult heroes for a bit. I mean, if you look at Kara Hoey, she was in movies that, you know, with La Galang, that were breakthrough movies, but the person that came out of the La Galang movies as the major person to receive a breakthrough, in my opinion, was not Kara, it was Gordon Lau. So I mean, it's been that way. They've not had like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon exposure and promotion behind them, because those were not the films they were in, the kind of films they were in. So and nowadays you don't have really, from Hong Kong anyway, that kind of action heroine. Possibly the next one is the person you were talking about last podcast from Thailand, the female Tony Jaa.
Ah, right.
Maybe that will be a difference compared to what I was just talking about with the 80s and 90s.
Cool.
What I was going to say, reading it and thinking, I totally disagree with Tons of Fun. I think there's been many, many female action stars in US films. It's some of the biggest films of all time. You got Linda Hamilton in Terminator and Terminator 2. Not so much Terminator, to be fair, whereas she's kind of, you know, typical horror film final female kind of role. But in Terminator 2, she's an absolute badass, ready for war. She kicks a whole lot of ass. Sigourney Weaver, classic style, in especially in Aliens, where she's whooping ass at the end. But actually, she's a badass all through that film and through all the sequels. Jamie Lee Curtis kicked ass in a few films. Carrie Ann Moss, obviously, in the Matrix films. She beats loads of ass. Sharon Stone, The Quick and the Dead, and Total Recall. She's a bit of a femme fatale, lots of action. Angelina Jolie doing the Tomb Raider films, which obviously made tons of money. Mila Jovovich in Fifth Element and the Resident Evil films, which have made bucket loads of money. Bridget Fonda. She was in film?
The Assassin.
The Assassin, and a few other action films as well. Gina Davis obviously did The Long Kiss Goodnight and that shitty pirate film with Matthew Modine. Halle Berry recently in Catwoman, which is supposed to be a massive turd. I haven't seen it. And she was a Bond girl as well, did a bit of action in that. Pam Anderson did Barbed Wire. Jodie Foster did that one recently where she goes on some kind of mad rampage in Revenge. I can't remember what it was called.
The Brave One?
Yeah, that's the bad boy. Mm-hmm. So I actually think Tons of Fun's totally wrong. I think there's been many female action stars in the West for a long time making very large amounts of money.
And I guess I misinterpreted the question totally. Because I was thinking about... it's just a case of me reading in an improper way, but I was thinking about the Asian action heroines and their reception in the West.
Right.
But you know, it's an open question in a way, I guess. Or not.
And I didn't bother trying to read the question because I know he likes to catch me out. So.
Oh, you have a history, you two.
Well, yes, we co-own HKC UK. I know how he thinks.
So he managed to trip up me then? Is that it?
Say nothing.
I got one. It wasn't stupid, I got one.
Didn't fox me out. Ahead of the curve here.
Yeah, just make fun of the Swede, I know what the deal is. And I guess the third question I should really, really watch out for.
Okay, Ken, why don't you read out the third question?
Okay. Word on the street is that Knirtan has his own fan site. What do you others make of this, and are you jealous?
Mike?
Do I have my own fan site? I didn't know that. If you exclude the Facebook.
I think that is the fan site.
Well, I think if I'm going to start picking apart the question, then for kickoff, word on the street. I'd like to know which street, because it's definitely not my street. To be honest...
It's not my street either.
Yeah, we love Ken, but I've got a feeling that not many people around my street will know who he is. Make of this...
Well, you have to start with the people on your street finding out that you're the master and CFO behind the Green Fan DVD. Start with that. Well, yeah. And then move on.
I think that they've got that from me wearing the green suit with Green Fan DVD written on the back.
And going around with the green fan whenever you go outside.
Yeah, just walk around with the green fan.
Saying, oh, mate, oh.
Well, you know, I might be jealous if, you know, Ken's section of the POF board had, like, you know, some posts on it. It's a little bit low in activity.
Right.
And also,
it's got two topics now.
Well,
100% increase.
Yeah, well, that's progress. You can't deny that.
Is Facebook, like, has 6 members now?
I'll bet that's more than I've got, but... Let's go
and
over
the thing
that.
Is, both of us are members. So excluding that, there's 4.
I'm there in spirit, to be honest. I think, you know, Ken knows how much I love him, so to put it, you know, put it on Facebook would, you know, maybe just a bit crass. Over
yeah,
the pudding.
Yeah, I don't need the verification.
Yeah. I need the validation.
The validation, yes.
Also.
But am I forced to actually be the UN Secretary of General if that Facebook group gets noticed by the world? Am I going to be forced into, you know?
If the world demands it, Ken, then how could you resist?
So everybody, peace on Earth. Is that okay? Can we do that?
Is that your first motion, is it? If you
probably. That would be the first and probably the extent of my suggestions.
So your strategy would be that of a Miss World winner.
Probably, that's where as much activity that goes on up in my head. I have too much ninjas in my head, so I can't really think of world questions.
What about you, Stu? How are you feeling about Ken's popularity?
Well, let's see. As it says, are you jealous? For me, I'm not jealous. Like, all that shit you heard last week, that was scripted.
And I encouraged it to, yeah. And I encouraged to make a little bit of a joke about ChemCast. Mm.
So, yep, yeah, I'm not jealous at all.
Yeah, so that tells you tons of fun. In your face.
Say goodbye to one of our listeners. Right, moving on to our next segment. What have you guys been watching recently?
Couple of golden oldies. Not a couple, three actually. But won't elaborate much on each one. I first rewatched the new German DVD of Peking Opera Blues, known in Germany as Peking Action Blues, which is, you know, the highly regarded Choi Hak film. But when I first watched that on the old Megastar DVD, which is probably one of the shittiest DVDs I've ever owned, I couldn't really see what the fuss was about. Much due to the subtitles, for once, I've only reacted like this once, that the subtitles were too incoherent for me. Normally I can decipher, you know, the basics of a film, and also the sound was incredibly grating. You know, one of those times where it really ruined the experience. Now with the new German DVD that has all the, you know, the mono sound and English subtitles, and cleaned up subtitles a bit, you could finally see that the combination of farce and politics and really cool action all blend together into quite a good film. But I'm not going as far as saying as it's the Choi Hak masterpiece, because I still feel the gravely underrated Shanghai Blues will forever be my favorite Choi Hak film, which is the perfect blend between the farce, the comedy, and what it's like during war times. So, but it plays it more light than Peking Opera Blues does, but still, you know, a classic in its own right, but not amongst the 5 stars out of 5 crowd for that particular film. What do you guys think about that in general, that film?
I have not had the chance to see it.
No, I haven't seen it either.
Okay. Moving on then. Rewatched People's Hero. Since Maya released it on DVD a few months ago, I decided to rewatch it for probably the 10th time. Derek Yee's People's Hero, that is supposedly a remake of Dog Day Afternoon. But probably just, well, I can't say for sure if it's a shot-for-shot remake or just a similar story about a bank robbery gone wrong and the heist, or rather the siege that happens afterwards. But it's still an incredibly good film, and because what Derki does is to... He has quite a large character gallery, basically the people that are stuck in the bank with the stupid robbers, one of them being Tony Logan and Chiwai, and then they're taken over by the big bad robber, played by Dick Long. And along the way he has established the basic characters in the bank, the basic problems of the characters, the different sides of society that they come from, and within this very short running time, I think the movie's only 80 minutes long, he managed to create that great tension, and it's really a good character piece that in the end belongs more to Dick Long's performance than that character, that very hard and calculating character that manages to have his mind pretty much spiral during these few hours. He when he doesn't get what he wants, his behavior gets a bit unsure of himself, and it all leads up to quite a dark experience, which sort of makes sense. This was Derki's second film. The first one was The Lunatics, which is still for me the most shocking Hong Kong movie ever made. That scarred me. It's a really haunting film, and People's Here is along that, quite a grave social commentary about the way police handles these situations, but I think the movie he did after this, The Bachelor Swan Song, is his first light movie, so he needed to get out of that funk, if you will. It's fun to see Derek directing Dick Long. I believe they starred in at least one movie together at Shaw Brothers' Shaolin Prince. But I don't know if they did any other movie together. Do you know that, Mike?
What was that, sorry?
Do you know Shining if they... Yeah, did Derki and Dick Long do any other movie together at Shaw Brothers?
Not that I know of, no. Derki was... well, like, you know, obviously Dick Long was in films through the 60s and 70s and 80s, but I think by 70s and 80s, Derki kind of came in towards the... late 70s?
Yeah.
Starring in films, wasn't he?
Yeah, at least his first starring role was 77, 78 with Death Duel. He might have done a movie or two where he's been there, supporting or background player or whatever. But, I mean, it was not too long after he left Shaw Brothers that he, you know, all of a sudden he did pretty solid movies from the get-go. Not even pretty solid, excellent movies from the get-go. And all up to recently Protégé, and now probably the latest one is the Jackie Chan film that is shot in Japan.
Right.
I think I read that they're done with that, and I don't know where it is on the schedule, but at any rate, he's kept a pretty solid level to his films throughout the years. The last movie I watched that I watched a few times was another Choi Hak film, The Chinese Feast, the Lunar New Year film from 1995, the cooking film. Still just a fun film with you know, great cast of the time: Leslie Cheung, Anita Yun, who has bright red hair, and about half a dozen of excellent cooking scenes that really does make you hungry, and it's kind of enjoyable too to watch other people from Choi Hak's Once Upon a Time in China series, Vincent Chow, or Chow Wen Chow, I think his name is, he took over from Jet Li in the Wong Fei Hung role. He plays basically Wong Fei Hung. He plays a chef, a very kind chef, but it's pretty much Wong Fei Hung. He's quite good in it. It's also fun to have that movie in sync sound, because you have Vincent speaking Mandarin and everyone else speaking Cantonese, and no one really cares about that aspect. And he has a cool fight with Hung Yanam. Just a fun film. Totally Lunar New Year appropriate. So, yeah.
Is it better than God of Cookery? Which is the ultimate kind of Chinese cookery film, I think.
I think they're very much different, because God of Cookery is just a fucking weird film at times. It, you know, it challenges you a bit. Chinese Feast plays it safe. So, I can't really say that one is the better than the other. I probably laugh more at God of Cookery.
Yeah, that film's hilarious.
The 18 bronze man that beats up Stephen Chow constantly and drags his bloody face across the ground. I mean, that's more laughs in itself than Chinese Feast. But Chinese Feast is just a fun experience. And it even ends with the entire film crew in shot during the end credits, just toasting. You can see Choi Hark in the middle. So, you know.
Just kind of light, fluffy Luna film.
Yeah. So that's me.
Well, I don't think I've watched anything recently. But I've been missed out on some film watching. I think, if I haven't already mentioned it yet, which I don't think I have on a pop, the last film I watched is Justice My Foot.
No, you've not mentioned it.
Good. The Stephen Chow film, directed by Johnny To. I think it's from 92, something like that.
Mm.
Early 90s. A period film where Stephen Chow plays a cocky, loudmouth, smart aleck lawyer. Which is, you know, one of the stock Stephen Chow characters. And Anita Moy plays his wife. Well, his kick-ass wife. She's always doing the beating up people shtick, and he's doing all the verbal attacks. I think it's a testament to how much I like Stephen Chow what a winning kind of persona and character he has. That I was sitting through this film thinking, yeah, I'm enjoying this. Yeah, it's good, this is. When I wasn't, I was really, really hoping to enjoy it and really, really trying to. But it's just really boring. Hey, the laughs don't come from, I don't think, really good jokes or any really good setups. They pretty much all come just from Stephen Chow's performance and the little extras and his facial expressions and anything he can squeeze out of the material is where the few jokes, a few laughs come from. There's no actually really good solid jokes in it. And so a Stephen Chow film that's not funny, it just didn't really have anything going for it. Apart from, you know, actually saying that, Anita Moy and Stephen Chow's kind of chemistry, the way they spark off each other, is really good. It's kind of nice to see a film where, you know, the central male and female pairing isn't a, oh, will they, won't they get together kind of romance, because they're a couple that are married and happily married. Where they go through a few arguments and stuff, but that's generally how their relationship is. So that was quite interesting and quite fun. And Lung Kai Yan appears in it briefly, and it's always great to see him. But there's not really much going on. I find it difficult to kind of review it and say much about it, because there really isn't much memorable about it. I mean,
I heard, Mike. Can you if you think about it this way, because I've read negative reviews about that film, but do they play up, you think, the verbal comedy more, and therefore we're completely lost, the Western audience, or rather the non-Cantonese speaking audience?
Well, I mean, that's always a possibility, that's for sure. I actually was watching it, the Mandarin dub of it, because I had the new Celestial remaster. And I was watching it with the Mandarin dub on, because I was with a Mandarin-speaking friend.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, rather than have the Kanto on, I put that on for him. I mean, obviously it's all down to taste and stuff, but he wasn't exactly rolling around on the floor laughing either.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And to be fair to the Celestial subs on that, they seem pretty good, and when there's puns used, they tend to have a, you know, little tiny bracketed description, sort of a description, so you can understand that they're using a pun. But of course, there's always the chance that you're going to miss things with the Stephen Chow film if you don't speak Cantonese, or, you know.
But it doesn't sound like they're structuring it around verbal jokes only. I mean, you can still sense that this is one of these times where the stuff isn't funny, you know, it's boring, as you say. So, I mean, you can't hinge everything on verbal jokes, and I don't think I've seen a Stephen Chow film that does that. I think would be pretty surreal for us if it was all that.
Well, the thing about Stephen Chow is that the kind of verbal jokes obviously work on a couple of levels, which is, you know, there's good quality jokes and ideas that can be translated and you can pick up from subs and that are still really funny. And then you get to a whole level of, you know, gibberish kind of and pun-related, Cantonese puns and stuff, which, you know, most of the time, unless you speak the language, you're not going to pick up on. But also there's, you know, the slapstick and physical comedy going on. Well, I mean, there was the mix, but like I said, I just don't think there was any. I think the script to start with just wasn't very good, because there's just not there's no solid good setups or good jokes. The humour, like I said before, comes from what Stephen Chow and a few other people in the cast can kind of squeeze out of it through their performances. I mean, did either you two like it, or have you seen it before?
I haven't seen it, no.
Me either.
Probably due to the bad reviews that I read, I've just not had any urge to try it out as such. But along the line, I want to complete the Stephen Chow cycle. In a way, I mean, obviously, I'm gonna give this a chance, considering the crap I watch. Otherwise, this can't be bottom of the barrel stuff.
Wait, it's not. It's like I said, it's not a terrible film. It's just not a very good film, and nowhere near the kind of the standards that you might have for Stephen Chow. Well, that I've got for Stephen Chow, at least. It's obviously, you know, God of Cookery, King of Comedy, Shaolin Soccer, Kung Fu Hustle.
It's
lots of very funny films.
I was thinking about what you said, the interaction between Stephen Chow and Anita Moy's characters, that worked. That also was sort of carried over when Stephen Chow co-directed Forbidden City Cop, which is a tremendous film. And again, that features him and Karina Lau as a married couple. And the description you gave fits pretty much exactly to that relationship.
Right, yeah, I haven't seen her. Well, that's what I understand, but I haven't seen the Forbidden City Cop
yet. There is possibly a movie where, you know, out of 10 jokes, I may miss 6, you know, local jokes. But it's just a perfect combination of, you know, the physical stuff and the silly stuff, and it just works thoroughly despite. So, you know, for you and everyone else out there, Forbidden City Cop, that is pure Stephen Chow magic. And I believe he co-directed it, but it wasn't set, he didn't set out to do that. Vincent Koch, the other director, is, I don't know if I pronounced that right, anyway. Not the cock of a director. He realized that Stephen Chow was bringing so much to the table that, you know, I might as well put him as co-director. He basically did that much on this film. And in the end, Stephen Chow, he did co-direct for a few movies, but nowadays it's him going solo.
Well, I actually didn't watch anything this week, but I'm guessing this sort of counts. I watched a documentary, which was basically a look at martial arts and the kung fu cinema of Hong Kong. It was the IFC documentary Cinema Hong Kong Kung Fu, which was also known as Chop Socky, the cinema of Hong Kong.
Oh yeah. It's been included on a fair few DVDs. Mostly the Australian Shaw Brothers DVDs have included the different documentaries that they did, whether it was martial arts, action, or wucha. Mm-hmm. I think it comes from that series.
Yeah. But yeah, it's roughly just 50 minutes of... what's his name? Jim Nicholson narrating, just talking you through everything from the Shaw Brothers to Jet Li in Once Upon a Time in China, Jackie in, I think it was Police Story, but it's just basically like a big montage of interviews cut in with movie clips of everyone from Cara Hoy up to Run Run Shaw, and even clips from like the earliest Wong Fei Hung movies going up to Kill Bill.
Was it a good basic documentary, basic introduction for people?
Yeah, I thought I'd done alright, because... Wait a second. I've got the IMDb Movie Connections page up here, and it was released in 2003, but Kill Bill never came out to 2004. Okay, anyway.
Conspiracy.
Forget about the conspiracy. They're also saying Zatoichi is referenced as a huge influence on Hong Kong cinema.
Ah, Kill Bill. That's a film starring a female Western film. Two films kicking ass.
Wait.
In your face, tons of fun.
An hour later. Come on, leave the guy alone.
Charlie's Angels. That's got three women in it. Come on.
Right, get what we're going to do.
And in the Eurovision, there's also been three women at times, maybe, singing together.
But right, that's it.
Two men as well.
It's Eurovision fever at POF tonight.
Right, where were we? Yeah, this documentary's alright, I think... I reckon 7 out of 10. There you go, a rough verdict. But if you could find it without having to pay for it, YouTube. Yeah, it's worth looking out. Ken, I reckon if you prepared anything for like an underrated film segment.
I have indeed. So get your pen and pencils ready, or rather your IMDb or Hong Kong Movie Database. The movie this week, what I consider an underrated movie, but again, it's a movie that very few have watched, I think, is a movie called No Compromise, released in 1988, starring Danny Lee and Carol Cheng. Also, Lam Wai and Pauline Wong, Ken Lo, Wu Ma, Billy Lau, Xing Fuyong, the list goes on. A cop drama, and Danny Lee again plays a cop called, lo and behold, Lee. But this is one of the better ones. This is a darker thriller, where and a better Lisa performance, as I like to call it. You know, it's obviously a cops and robbers tale, but also it blends in the effect on your family as well. In this case, Danny Lee's wife is played by Carol Cheng in a totally serious role, way before she got her most major acknowledgement in her Fatal Ways. And they hunt another pair of husband and wife on the other side of the law, played by Lam Wai, who was the lead in Long Arm of the Law. And Pauline Wong was in Her Vengeance and tons of other flicks. So it's an effective and dark thriller that has decent characters, character drama at the same time, and probably one of the better movies that Billy Chan ever directed. And to be honest, I don't know too much about Billy Chan. I always had the impression that he was part of either Jackie's or Samo's stunt players. Does anyone know anything about that?
Billy Chan?
Yeah.
It's not a name that's standing out to me from the few
Peter Chan's brother.
Oh, yeah?
I think.
But it, you know, it's one of those guys that has, you know, credits as an extra and stuntman and casino thug and rascal thug god in Cave, going back to the 70s and going through Samo's films, and mostly Samo's films, it seems. You know, Warriors 2, Enter the Fat Dragon, Old Couple, Knockabout, Counts of the Spooky Kind. So he probably was more visible in his films, but not, you know, one of these stuntmen that ended up being a fan favorite as such. He went into directing from the mid-80s and onwards. And outside of No Compromise, he made a very fun Lam Ching Ying film, Crazy Safari.
All right.
Which was the movie they made with, in, I guess, South Africa, with the star from The God Must Be Crazy. A little bushman. So Billy Chan obviously knew a thing or two about versatility, but amongst about 10 movies or so that he directed, maybe 3 or 4 were true standouts, including No Compromise, which has some really harsh moments. And I think you, Mike, had seen Death Duel. I'm going to make a Shaw Brothers connection here. And in Death Duel, there's a sequence where I think Derek Yee is performing surgery on himself. There's a really gory moment where he's digging into his arm and stuff. And there's a similar moment here that is just absolutely mind-blowingly disturbing. And you wonder, how the hell is this complete? And why is this movie not the highest rating ever imaginable in a Hong Kong movie? Yeah, it's overall a very good and exciting film, and don't be discouraged by the fact that it's yet another Danny Lee film where he plays a cop. Occasionally, he made a few standouts in that role as Lisa. So, that's the recommendation.
It has nothing to do with this.
No, it has nothing to do with No Compromise, the Evander Holyfield story. Which I'm sure everyone thought of when I said No Compromise. Especially you, Hong Kong movie fans and stuff. And I bet you were thinking about that film, Mike.
What was that, sorry?
I bet you were thinking about the No Compromise, the Evander Holyfield story instead of the Hong Kong movie.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing as you make connections all over the place here. Eurovision.
I've got that on my shelf, actually.
The Danny Lee film or the
Evander
Holyfield
story.
And it's been watched next.
Fuck Danny Lee. I don't think I've even ever seen a Danny Lee film. I've got to apologise there, Ken. I was listening to you. But
no problem.
Just checking on Senai's website. And to be greeted by pitch stills from my film. From Ninja in Ancient China. On the main page of the film festival. Ooh, I know somebody's website who's getting a serious plugging today. Awesome.
Maybe you can, I'm going to be unashamedly improper here. Maybe you can ask them to put up a review quote or two from various DVD reviews of the film or reviews of the film.
Which DVD reviews would you be thinking of there, Kenneth?
Maybe my review of Ninja in Ancient China.
Yeah.
What about mine? Oh wait, I've not done it yet.
Yeah, you lazy bastard. How long have you had that DVD for, Stuart?
Oh, let's see, I'll judge by the amount of dust on it.
Is that like counting the rings in a tree?
Yes. The layers of dust on the rack.
How thick the dust is on Stu's finger when he wipes it. probably like half a centimeter.
Then you watch the movie, and it's gathered that much dust.
Well, I think that's almost a link, you know, a segue onto Stu's band project.
I guess it has to be. Okay. Well, it's kind of been a slow week this week. Didn't have much time to dig into my unwatched movie pile.
What's the count?
The count now is 43 movies.
And it started at 45, is that so?
Yep. So, yeah, I think to help myself, I've cancelled my love
hang on,
films.
Hang on.
What the fuck, son?
So, watching films on YouTube doesn't count?
Shut your
He's
face.
He's seeking out films on YouTube just to...
Yeah.
This was done before that.
Oh, yeah.
And... You can? Why am I allowed to say this?
You are changing the rules all the time. Go on then, carry on. Your ban list.
Aye, you'll be banned next. Right.
You need me.
Oh, just the mute button's right here. Okay.
Can we actually force you to watch movies too?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to get to the point, but that's... Right, okay.
And I'm talking specific movies, not, you know, watch two this week.
What, you want me to, like, count the amount of dust that's on Juliet in Love?
Well, that's one. If you watch that until next podcast on fire, then, you know, you're...
On my way.
Well, if you've got any Shaw Brothers there, you're going to have to get stuck into that, ready for the Shaw Brothers extravaganza.
Yep, that is actually my plan for next week, to watch, well, try and watch one a day, which is a... Big fucking jump for me.
Well, what Shaw Brothers have you got in the pile of
None.
Films you've got to get through? None.
None. Aye.
So how are you going to watch any then?
I could just watch the films I own as well as the ones I've not seen.
What, you mean rewatch?
Yes.
I thought you meant, you know, going for some new films.
Nope. I'll just rewatch some of the classics so I could kind of be in the mood for it.
So how are you deciding which films you're going to watch? Is it, you know, a dust-by-dust basis? Or, you know, is it mood?
Mood.
So wait, when you go through all this pile of films, are you going to... What are you huffing for? I'm showing an interest in your segment here, Stu.
Okay, continue.
Well, you know, when you get through the 43...
Right.
Are you going to just, you know... Maybe buy one or two, get into HMV, grab yourself a film, or any other major store? Or are you going to have like a massive DVD blowout?
If I've done that, I might just kind of end up here like a year later doing the same again.
Yeah, it'll be fun though when you get like your massive stack of DVDs through the post. So
and, a happy postman.
Yeah.
One by one in CD-WOW... CD-WOW parcels, just one by one by one by one.
Yeah, so what are you going to do? Are you going to ease back into it, or do you think you'll be ready for a big splurge? Because on your rate of movie watching, 43 is going to last you a long time.
Well, I'm judging it. Well, with the rate I have the new, it's usually one a week. So sometime next year...
Jesus.
There is absolutely no way you're going to last a year without buying DVDs, Stu. Absolutely no way.
Okay. Do you have like free time, at work between people borrowing books? You can squeeze in like 30 minutes of movie during the day?
Nah, unfortunately.
Oh. I tell you what you could do, right? Is get an MP4 player.
Well,
films on that, and then when you sit on the bus and stuff.
Yeah, I was thinking of that today, because I have like an iPod Touch.
There you go.
I've been watching all the movies on that, which, like, I didn't download, and I've kind of run out of them. So anyway, in a roundup next week, I promise yous, I will have 40 movies remaining.
Ah.
I'm going to cut 3 out this week.
Impressive.
So, yep, next week I'll be
given you my reason why I couldn't, but still, something to look forward to, eh? Moving on to one of our more popular segments of the show, the plug-in. I'm starting. One of the main plugs this week is I want to encourage all of you to pick up the next copy of Screen Power magazine.
Why is that, Stu?
Well, funnily enough, I've written an article for it last year, and from the looks of it, it's being featured as one of the main articles for the March issue. So, yep, being released on the 28th of March, you could buy it, because, like, hey, Puff's telling you to.
And do you want to give us a teaser as to what to expect from that article? What is it about?
Well, basically, it is a big rant and rave about my thoughts and feelings and all the history of Wilson Yip's Flashpoint.
Just that film or Wilson Yip in general?
No, just a big article about Flashpoint. So, for more details, please log on to screen-power.com. And other plugs, podcastonfire.com, where you could check out this awesome video posted from forum member Pants on Fire, which is basically like a Puff fan video. So I encourage you all to check that out next time you're on the site. Check out the Podcast on Fire forum at podcastonfire.com/forum. My review site, hosted along beside the controversial Tons of Fun. Aye, so hkcuk.co.uk, dragonsdenuk.com, and kensogoodreviews.com, which is minus Ken, just sogoodreviews.com.
To be clear.
Yeah.
As per usual, I'm going to obviously plug www.greenfandvd.com, which still got Ninja in Ancient China on sale, and news of Return of the Deadly Blade and the release date of that should be popping up hopefully soon, along with a little bit of an overhaul of the front page to coincide with that. And then I'm also going to plug www.hkflix.com, because they're selling Ninja in Ancient China and it's doing pretty well over there as well, so go there and keep buying more.
Each one of you, 5 copies each.
Yeah. And then last, as I, you know, www.senishow.com, which I've plugged before, senishow.com, which is the big martial arts expo, mainly for, like, the actual arts and, you know, the sports version of it. But there's also a Fighting Spirit Film Festival, which is a small little auditorium for screening some films. And this year they're going kind of British and ninjas. 10 Dead Men, Underground and Sucker Punch, which are three British films which were made in the last couple of years. And hopefully there should be some good stuff there. I always like watching a British martial arts film. You have seen a bit poo, but you know, it's always nice to see British people having a go at doing some martial arts, and, you know, hopefully they'll make a good film at some point. So one of those three should be decent. And then, as I mentioned before in other weeks, Return of the Deadly Blade is screening on Saturday the 26th at 12:30. Obviously, that's got David Chang, Curata, Norman Chu, Yung Pan Pan, we mentioned earlier on the show, Bully. That should be a good one. And then, I believe they've got 4 films based around this ninja theme. And that'd be Naruto, Ninja Clash in the Land of Snow. And then, I think that's the film of that, the manga film. Plus an episode of, an extra episode of Naruto as well. Now, personally, I haven't seen Naruto, the anime, so I don't know much about it. You watched it, Stu?
I rented rented one of the discs, but I think I was kind of never really got into it after watching the first episode, so I never bothered with the rest. But it seems fairly popular.
Yeah, well, also, apart from the ninja thing, they've got a part of, not apart from, the Master Ninja, which is was a TV series from the mid-80s, and it starred, well, they're screening the pilot, a 90-minute pilot from that, from 1984, which stars Sho Kosugi. He's obviously a famous Japanese kind of martial arts actor. Did quite a lot of ninja films and stuff. And I think he does the fight choreography as well. I'm not entirely sure. And apparently, I'm just reading here, Demi Moore appears in it as well. One of the first. So yeah, that's screening on the Sunday. And then we have a film called Furore, which I'm guessing is the fourth ninja film. I don't know much about that one. And lastly, Ninja in Ancient China, which will be screening on the Sunday at 2 p.m. the 27th of April.
Very cool.
So that's a very long plug, maybe a bit too long, but yeah, it's definitely worth looking at the site, because now they've got all the info up on the films and the screening times and stuff. You can check out what's on and when. That's me plugged out.
Well, as usual, SoGoodReviews.com, featuring ninja reviews aplenty. This week only one though. That's going rather well. I'm enjoying that contrast in reviews every week. I mean, I reviewed Naked Ambition, Troy reviewed Ninja Strike Force, starring Richard Harrison, so, you know, you can't get any more different than that. Also, my new plug for the week is a site that I quite enjoy that mixes, that does Dabble in Asian stuff occasionally, DVDmaniacs.net, which mostly focuses on a lot of, call it drive-in trash, if you will, grindhouse trash, but they also do a fair amount of Asian DVD reviews. And this week, for instance, they have the review of the Image US DVD of The Magic Blade, Choyun film, some Japanese exploitation, Erotic Diary of an Office Lady, various Sonny Chiba movies, Rarescope releases. So it's a good site to go for the underground stuff, for the cult stuff that does include a trip or two into Taiwanese or Hong Kong cruddy cinema, perhaps, but still, it's from dedicated people. It's a funny thing, this today they apparently have a feature called Screenshot of the Day, and they feature a shot of Richard Harrison in his ninja headband, and I'm thinking, which, if someone gets that particular IFD film right, because it's probably, it could be any film, just about any film, they're pretty much gods when it comes to IFD and Richard Harrison flicks. If they can name which one that is, I can probably have a guess. I'll probably be so wrong. So, you know, I don't know what the equivalent is if you post like a shot of a Buddhist monk, a bald Buddhist monk from a Hong Kong movie or Taiwan movie or whatever. You probably have quite a few movies to think of. So there you go, DVDmaniacs.net.
And one last mention for tonight. Special thanks out for Tons of Fun for the questions. We'll contact you soon, as well as Pants on Fire for his questions last week. So yeah, expect an email. And I'm the host, Stuart Sutherland.
Ken.
Mike.
And we'll catch you next time.
that guy cracks me up.